Every member desiring to speak must, if possible, stand wide. We then proceed to the open session. May only speak from the podium during debate, and at all other times address the chair from a microphone on the floor. B. Deliver his or her address in such other manner as the member is physically able to do, and is agreed by the presiding officer. Then, voting N. Yes, the speaker or the assembly, the chairperson of the council, deputy speaker, and the chair, deputy chair of the council must be referred to as honorable or Mr. or Madam Speaker, honorable or Mr. or Madam Chairperson, honorable Mr. or Madam Deputy Speaker, honorable Mr. Deputy Chairperson. Again, this has been drawn from the NA rules.
I just want to point out some semantics. Speaker and chairperson they don't have a gender. This is just semantically speaking. If it was chairman or chairwoman, it would have a gender attached to it. So theoretically speaking, to add Mr. or Madam it's not necessary because it's a gender-neutral term, so you could actually say speaker or chairperson, but it's just a semantic that we must keep in mind.
I think we're trying to clarify for our members just to understand that there's no harm going to retain the attention. No harm. It's just a little bit of the
Chairperson, I just wanted to say that 14L, which derives from NA Rule 78, I just wanted to suggest that when we get to the next item, and that is 14M, there's a little bit of a contradiction actually between the two, because again, the joint sitting are debates, and they are called, people are called from a list. Now, 14M3 refers to that list. So I think to have, as a starting point, every member desiring to speak must, if possible, stand while addressing the chair. I think it is not the order of the day, because usually you are called upon to be recognized by the speaker or the chairperson of the interview. I was just thinking that perhaps we should consider that it must be reformulated, because there is a distinct difference between operations in the NA and operations in joint system, and I don't think we should conflate the two. So I just wanted to make that point that you actually have to be recognized from a speaker's list in order to speak, except when you are raising your hand on a point of order and a point of privilege, and we have made provision for that. So I'm not 100% convinced that that is what we need. Thank you.
Yes, Honourable Kirian, is the issue here about desiring to speak as opposed to call upon to speak? Is that the main issue? I'm sure we can look into that when we do that.
Isn't that the number? When I desire to speak, I raise my hand. And I call to notice. And I'm giving a platform if the speaker or the shepherd decides to give me a platform. And then, but I must be recognized. That's why half of when you shall stand up and start talking without being recognized. Because you are desiring. But if there's a list of speakers, show the speaker or whoever presides over, we'll call according to the list of people who are going to participate. general doesn't take decision unless you are in the room one way or another. It's just a debate and a debate and thank you and you move on. But it's a very interesting debate on that. I think we must work it out in a manner that are simple rules, that are very straightforward, that are not too complicated. It's not very sitting, I'm not sitting every month. They sit met once in 4 months in general, but we have to have rules that are that regulate how we engage at the local level in that area. If there are issues that are there, I think we should be okay.
So if we ever got to a point where certain decisions could be taken
yeah.
in the joint sitting, then this will not be relevant.
Yeah.
Because we could have declaration of vote,
yeah.
where you do not have a speaker's list. The members would desire to speak, but we take the issue for the members. Again, the point on here, the other planning officer must be referred to as honorable house chairperson or yeah. And then C, no name, I think this is the point that was raised by honorable Boy Eder, no name to impugn the dignity or undermine the authority or legitimacy of any presiding officer may be used. This is about where there could be influence directing the presiding officers or using words or name to impugn their dignity or their legitimacy. Yeah. And then M, recognition of members to speak, subject to the joint rules, and in accordance with the joint rules, a member may speak only when recognized by the presiding officer during political of the joint city. A member may draw attention on the presiding officer to a point of order in accordance with joint rules, blah, 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 by a question of privilege. In a debate, the presiding officer must recognize a member in accordance with a list of speakers who are to speak in the debate and the times allocated for speeches by members of different parties.
Is there an issue there?
Yeah.
And then it doesn't cause problem? Mm-hmm. Can you proceed?
Then, the control of microphones. In the event of a member not showing due respect to the authority of or obeying an order or ruling or direction of the presiding officer or acting in a disruptive or positive order of manner in the joint sitting, the presiding officer may disable or switch off the microphone being used by such member or may order that it be disabled or switched off. Before proceeding in terms of this rule, the presiding officer must inform the member and the joint sitting of his or her intention to do so. This rule is really got its own challenges in terms of implementation. Some of the challenges have to do with the technical issues in the house. In the sense that when a planning officer mutes a member's mic, it mutes all the mics in the house on the floor of the house. That's challenge number one. And also the issue of notice being given beforehand. Certain sittings it's possible, it's easy to do, but in other sittings it's very difficult. Especially when there's serious disorder in the house. The chair to warn every member, I'm going to switch off your mic now, another member stands up, the chair has to do that. So I'm just raising that we should really be alert to it. But I guess that was the reason why it was like this.
It was really putting a lot of the that was debated at the time of the decision. Of the privilege of a member of being a member. That we can't have a situation where the member will speak and then we are switched off automatically and not even notified. Because that undermines completely the freedom of speech of a member of power. But how does it work logistically? I think it's another question that we can look at and ensure that members. They can abuse it because you can tell this one, but it seems members are prisoners. I think what I hear many times people say is, switch off your mic, and they switch it off. Mm-hmm. And then members, they go to another one, that one is switched off to, you can't move around. And I think by that coincidence, there's a two steps. It was very clear that they intentionally to switch off one, they want to use another one, then because all of them automatically switch off. A member doesn't do anything since they sit down to that. But they have been able to manage the debate in the chamber, the issue with the speaker fighting them. Because you can see back at some time, you want to use this one, Makabula, I want to use this one, but all the demonstrations are not. And then as a result of that, we tend to manage the house. Maybe not a bad idea. Let us work it out if it doesn't work in a country. But when speaking in general, there's no speaker issue. I think I have a very ladies and gentlemen approach in the last year.
Chair, now we proceed to the 49, just again to acknowledge Chair that as you did, the NCOP is here, the President of the Deputy Acting Deputy Secretary of the Parliament. So there are issues that you would like to raise, which are the definition of the chair you would do that.
Because you are here. From time to time we intervene. Of course intervene by raising your hand. Otherwise the mic I will start to switch it off. And then you must be recognized and you are given a platform. In recognition, I give you a platform. Don't hijack it. From time to time, we intervene to ensure that we move all of us together. And under Secretary has been here. We would also intervene in the state of advisor, advocate, champion. And everyone is here. They are free to assist us and to intervene. We are not a decision-making structure, we are making proposal. And feel free again to enhance our understanding
of the issues. Right, then 14N is about members of the restricted in regard to the time they have to speak, to the length of time they speak, to the times allocated to them in the list contemplated in Rule 14M. So the view that perhaps there's just too many words here. That you could do without in regard to the length of time you speak. You only have members shall be restricted to the times allocated to them in the list contemplated in the rule 45.
That's right. Of course, the whole paragraph is fine, but it's too long. Yeah. I think the essence of it is very clear.
Yeah.
Once you allocate it, you speak to it.
Yeah.
Don't reflect that ability sometimes. I'm not sure why we can't do that and be complicated with it. Quite looking for power, quite mean. When that party is in the field, it's rather party to say. Also, you guys were the citizens of Parliament. You wouldn't be here now. Can you imagine? You are not passing the rules now, we are out of them. Let us move on.
Then, we move on to Rule 14O, reference to member in respectful terms. That in joint sittings, members must refer to one another in respectful terms. No member may refer to any other member by his or her name only. No name to impugn the dignity of any member may be used. Respectful terms in application has meant that you say Mr., Miss, or Mrs. So that is how it has been understood by members, and that's not how it is applied. Otherwise, there is no specific rule for that, but respectful terms means that. Or any other manner, respectful manner for the members. Then 14P, unparliamentary or unacceptable language and gestures. No member may use offensive, abusive, insulting, disrespectful, unbecoming, or unparliamentary words or language. No offensive, unbecoming, or threatening gestures. The point has been made, any honorable sounds. It is the desire of this meeting that we include that.
That is good, because there are some of the sounds that are not wrong. It's how an honorable other member speaks, they're noticing it to members of the Italian. Is that Italian? And the member has, I think that's important. These are members of the parliament. Okay, I think funds would be included.
Well, members, we proceed to Rule 14PA, reflections of foreign members. Again, largely this has been taken from the current rules of the NA. No member may impute improper motives to any other member or cast personal reflections on a member's integrity or dignity of an abuser. In other ways, a member wishes to bring any improper or unethical conduct on the part of another member may do so only by way of the relevant procedure and mechanisms provided in the applicable house. This is new, members would know. In the NA, there's a procedure of substantive motions, and the idea is that substantive motions should apply to the old houses, but not later on sitting this point. Sub-rules 1 and 2 may also apply to reflections upon the president, premiers, ministers, deputy ministers, and local government representatives referred to in Section 57 of the Constitution who are not members of Parliament. So we know the issue about local government, that is work being undertaken in that regard. So we will not reopen that discussion at this point.
Let us again, just like 14PA, any issue that we want to raise the law?
So far as, and thank you, Chair, my fellowship. Insofar as the sub-rule 2 is concerned, I think the sub-committee may consider whether it would be possible in a joint sitting to bring a charge of unethical conduct against another member, or maybe that may only be applicable insofar as the two houses sitting separately is concerned.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we should retain the two houses to act on any such matter through, you know, by way of substantive motion. I just wanted to suggest, Chair, that we in fact also reflect the heading to read a little differently, because I was concerned that we did not include reference to the President, Cabinet members, Deputy, you know, etc. So maybe upon members and other participants or something, you know, something to that extent in the heading, so that we include them in the heading as well.
Perhaps we could take out under sub 1 in joint sitting and just clarify it to read members must refer to one another in respectful terms.
Certainly, Chair, I think the drafting issues will iron out coming to the draft. Yeah. There have been some very important interventions made by the Secretary, I think the Secretary as well, on drafting matters. Those will be taken care of when we spin up the document. 14PAA, reflections upon the Houses of Parliament and its proceedings and decisions. No member may reflect in a disrespectful manner upon the Houses or its forums and committees or upon their proceedings and decisions. Again, this is taken from the NA. 14Q, no member.
Chair, I'm sorry. I know this is in the National Assembly rules, but I find it's problematic in those rules too, because again, this is a very subjective understanding. I is it disrespectful to say that the House is out of control? Is it disrespectful to ask the presiding officer to bring the House back into control? Because, you know, this has happened. I'm one of the people that's done it. I've stood up in a point of order and asked the presiding officer to regain control of the House. And it was throwing back at me that I was reflecting on the house in a disrespectful manner. Now, I certainly wasn't. It was, I was stating a fact that the house was no longer in control, but the presiding officer took the subjective view that it was being disrespectful towards the house. So while I understand that, you know, it's an NA rule and it exists there, I just want to point out to this grouping that it is problematic, because if you state a fact that someone finds disrespectful, then this rule is thrown back at you, and that is problematic in terms of being a whip in the house, because there's others of us sitting here, including Honourable Doris, who, I mean, she will have the right at a point to stand up and say the house has now descended into chaos. Now, while she may be stating a fact, someone may think that she's being disrespectful to the forum.
If you look perhaps in the formulation, I think we must ask what is the intention of this rule. And the intention of this rule is that you respect democratic outcomes. So once a house has voted in a particular way, you should not criticize the house because the majority has voted in a particular way. So should we not perhaps look at a reformulation of this principle that you have to, as a member, you may have a different view, you may have been part of a minority decision, and you now are fed up with a house that took this decision, and you say, that stupid decision taken by the National Assembly on such and such a date, or whatever. And I think that is what it intends to regulate. It doesn't intend the whips performing their function to call on the presiding officers to bring the house in order. So I think we should just look at the legal minds to assist us to reformulate this, that it means exactly what we try to regulate.
Can we just find out, Chair, through whether the honourable members are proposing that we should rather look at the reflection on the decisions of the House?
That is the original intention.
Yeah. Now, if that is the proposal, because currently the rules do not make it possible for the joint sitting to take any decisions, so it may not sit comfortably in the current joint rules. If we were to say no member may reflect in a disrespectful manner on the decisions of the House or its forums. Unless if we're looking at the decisions which are taken by the Houses when sitting separately and their forums when sitting separately. Yeah.
Because what it's essentially saying is that you can criticize a decision,
yeah,
but you must do so in a respectful manner. So you can say, look, that was a bad decision of the House,
yeah,
but you're not allowed to say, you know, the House is foolish or something of those kinds.
Then feed to the House that taken this decision. Because that's an issue here that I thought you were talking about.
another committee, they come on court.
They come on court committee. Because we call sometimes committees.
I think that's really bad.
That's what we really try to do. But I think they're not with the team again, they work with us. So they have to
And then for the issue, no member may reflect on the merits of any matter on which a decision in a court of law is pending. I think we're trying to clarify that issue here. In a court of law. So it's not like a commission of inquiry, but it's a court of law. And then explanations. A member may. There's been two applications of subject care. The reason why subject care is kept in the rules is out of respect for the three arms of the state. That one arm of the state should not reflect on the functions or the functioning of another arm of the state. Then you get another dispensation where it's like newspapers or outsiders who say things about things that are before court. But we are an arm of the state. You're not like an ordinary member of the public. And that has always been the reasoning for retaining this subjudicial. Before, it did not talk to merits. It simply referred to reference to matters that are before courts. And the view was taken that, no, that would really be stifling freedom of speech. Members should be able to refer to issues before courts, and even issues on which judicial decisions are pending. But do not delve into the merits of what the court must do. So I think that's really how we've kind of viewed the application of the subject.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's more about the perception that it may create rather than the actual influence on the presiding officers. I mean, on the judicial officers. Yeah.
Okay, let's proceed.
Then explanations. There are two types of explanations. The one relates to vindication of conduct by a member. And the other deals with where a member believes that they have been misunderstood or misquoted. Now what the rule seeks to do is to practicalize this. Because before you had the rule, without giving guidance. So a member could just stand up and say, I need to clarify this. And there was no guidance for the presiding officer. Yes. What the rule now says is that there must be prior consent of the presiding officer before that explanation is given. And that the explanation was limited to reading into the record as correction, as a trading principle of observance. But not to exceed 3 minutes in duration, no debate shall be allowed. So this rule seems to be denied. And the second one relates to, let's say a member got involved in some conduct in the House, which was not considered unacceptable, and the member wishes to offer an explanation and to vindicate their conduct, or a member wishes to apologize to the House. Again, you need the prior consent of the presiding officer for the member to do this. And I think the rule was done.
Then the language team, they'll write it out. If there's a physical call and everything is missing, the essence of what you understand. But the policy topic is fine. Can you move?
Next point, the point of order. And again, here the issue is really about implementation of this rule. A member may raise a point of order at any time during proceedings of the joint sitting in terms of the procedures by stating that he or she is raising on a point of order. Then there's an insertion that a point of order must be succinct. It must not be prefaced by a speech leading up to the point of order. This is new. This is not in the NAO. It's something new. Be confined only to a member of a matter of parliamentary procedure or practice or a matter relating to unparliamentary conduct. This is in those rules. Not to be used to disrupt the member speaking when I attempt to respond to the member speaking. It's not in those rules. Must be raised immediately when the alleged breach of order occurs. The member raising the point of order must commence by quoting the exact rule of standing order, or at least the principle or subject matter upon which the point of order is based. If the member does not do so, the presiding officer may insist on him or her doing so. And if there's failure there, the PO may summarily rule that it does not amount to a point of order. The presiding officer may allow members to address the presiding officer briefly on the point of order that has been raised. I think this takes care of what was in that principle document earlier on, that there is already a rule, or there could be a rule, that allows members to clarify their issues and address the presiding officer. No member may raise a point of order again, or a similar point of order if the presiding officer has ruled that it is not a point of order, but not the matter of point of order. Member may not disrupt proceedings by raising points of order that do not comply with this point. When a point of order is raised during debate, the member called to order must resume his or her seat. And after the point of order has been stated, the presiding officer, the member raising the point of order must likewise immediately resume their seat. And the last one, the presiding officer must give a ruling and may give his or her ruling or decision on the point of order immediately, or to defer the decision to the earliest opportunity. No point of order may be raised in response to a considered ruling in the law. Then a ruling after the joint sitting is adjourned shall be given in the NA or NCOP, depending on which house the offending member belongs to. The second point here is the same issue. The presiding officer ruling on a point of order is final and binding. It may not be challenged or questioned in the joint sitting. The member who is aggrieved may address the matter to the speaker or the chair and request that the principal be referred to the joint rules committee. And the joint rules committee may deal with the matter as it deals with it. So that is, those are the rules on point of order.
But I think we learned to exercise that, I think, with that. Any issue with politics is that we take in this place here, yes. We still contend that is a correct rule.
Thank you. Can Mr. Carter just indicate to us the first part of the point of order? Clearly, the officials worked on some of the deficiencies of the NI rules, or maybe mechanisms that didn't work in practice. Could he perhaps just elaborate a little further?
Chair, that was really the attempt, but it's not really something that we're going to over. But the point of order should be, just like I mentioned, straight to the point, short and succinct. And we've also observed that points of order are sometimes used to disrupt the members who are at the podium speaking. It has to frustrate the speaker at the podium. That's our view of it, and it's observed us. Members may disagree with us, but that is what has happened. And also the issue of raising points of order on points of order. So raise a point of order, then another point of order on the point of order, even before the ruling is given.
Well, the members of parliament are very creative. I think we will have rules that will anticipate all the formats of members of parliament. So members of parliament, they know exactly the point of order. And, but they don't apply it the way we know it. They want to start a member sitting there. And then they keep on the point of order, point of order, point of order. So that the hospital, I think, of many politically correct.
Chair, I was just going to say, just to add on to what you say, this is why it's so essential that we meet with the presiding officers as well. Because many of them do the House no favour. Because they themselves lose their temper, and then they just say, that's it, no points of order, I won't hear the points. So they don't say, please let me finish ruling on this point of order before we go to the next one. There are some that are better than others, but this is precisely why the presiding officers also need to be taken through how these rules need to be implemented.
Subgroup 14 A and B about a member not being happy about the decision and requesting that the matter be referred to the Joint Rules Committee, and that the Joint Rules Committee must deal with the principle of such a matter. And B, it says the Joint Committee may not in any manner consider the specific ruling, which is final and binding. I am not sure what really the Joint Rules Committee will consider there, insofar as the ruling is concerned. If the prohibition is not to deal with the specific ruling, but to deal with the principle or the subject matter of the ruling, I'm not sure what. I know that is a rule that is contained in the Joint Rules of the, in the Rules of the National Assembly. But I'm not sure what would entail the principle or the subject matter of the ruling. The second point would be whether, because this would be the ruling by a presiding officer, whether the presiding officer will also be required to make a presentation to the Joint Rules Committee, or the Joint Rules Committee will just take a decision on the basis of what a member who is not satisfied would have presented to the Joint Rules Committee. I am not sure, Chair, if that also amounts to the review of the decision of a presiding officer.
I think there are two microphones on. Shepherdson, I hear what Afrik Sandela is saying, but actually we've already done this in the NA to a relative degree of success, because a member is maybe on the heat of the moment is stating that was unfair, or whatever the case might be. The presiding officer is then providing to the Joint well, and in the other case, to the Rules Committee, sort of clarification of why the ruling was made, or etc. And then the principle that was applicable is highlighted, and then we deliberate on the matter, but at no stage do we allow any review of the ruling to take place, because that would really allow the houses to descend in chaos. The presiding officers are there, but it's also good to keep them on their toes so that they can actually, with the assistance of table staff, make rulings that they can explain. And I think the process is a good one, because it is a sort of a letting off the steam from the member, and thereafter they actually relax about it. So I think it's not a bad principle, as long as we do not regard it as a review of the ruling of the presiding officer, and we all understand that principle. Thank you.
We will have another view on this matter, that's fine. But I think we must have our views in the manner. First of all, that's one thing very clear. What is the existing electricity that is applicable to joint sitting consideration? But it is not applicable for joint sitting catchers of this. And then, but that's because joint sitting is constant. That's the problem that we are facing already. And this is not taking the last project. We are still facing today, I think. That's the place that we are trying to do now. Those don't fit regular, like NCOP, NA. You may need other rules here. You may not have to other rules here. And then I think we must look at if it is applicable. We can put it in if it is not applicable in terms of the arrangement of procedure that is. But allowing members who are totally agree to some space as well as a figure of the management issue more than taking issues down. Because members can be absolutely still offended and swing that way. Because Parliament is politics, then we need to open a space where members who are able to deal with them to bring it to census, housing, and so on. I think it can work in other areas, may not work in other areas. I'm not sure about the Parliament. The joint city, where they could work or not, but I think we should apply our minds to the government. If it does cause no harm, it's fine. It may cause harm for us, I think we can reconsider it and try to put another way of that. Helen?
I think I stand corrected as well, but it's something that's not used at all, or if so, very infrequently. But if a member's aggrieved by a ruling, I'm not talking about a considered ruling, I'm just talking about a ruling and the member says that comment is out of order, the presiding officer says that's out of order, can you please withdraw? There's nothing preventing the whips of a party writing to the speaker and saying, can you please unpack that ruling, explain why you issued that. So I'm saying it doesn't necessarily always have to go to a structure, the Joint Rules Committee or the NA Rules Committee in the case of the NA. There can be some political management of the situation as well, which would prevent, you know, I mean, I know in the case of the National Assembly, quite a few, you know, times members say, I'm going to, you know, challenge that or take that on review. I think it's a misunderstanding of it. But essentially what I'm saying is there can be an element of political management.
No, it is a fundamental issue, more than another issue. That's why I'm sure that we manage it and allow some space for the federal government. Because there will be decisions that affect even our lives. You can give them the wrong decision. General members who are still not allowed some space to do that. Because if it doesn't cause harm to everyone, if it does cause harm, it will be misunderstood, then there will be a reason to remove it. And have other processes to deal with some of the problems that we may. But because we don't see every now and then, the sufficient space between now and 2018, state of the nation and stuff like that, I think we can look at the housing and the system. To make again the anticipation problem that will never exist in terms of the joint system. But given the fact that our politics are changing every time, we may have it in the joint system, but another issue of the I try, is that does the court come to the sentence or doesn't court come? Doesn't court come. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, before you say that, where it has been, where this rule has been invoked, is what's fine. The issue of quotation of court judgments for us is the principle of the ruling was confirmed. We now proceed to Rule 14SA, raising a question of privilege. Question of privilege. Now, to start with, the question of privilege really be a matter that affects the constitutional provisions and privileges of members, also the provisions of the Privileges and Immunities Act, where members feel that their rights in terms of both the Constitution and that Act have been trampled upon, and then they should rise on a breach of privilege. Now, the procedure is that if there is a perceived breach of privilege, it must be reported to the Speaker or the Chairperson of the Council without delay. If there are less breach, in the opinion of the Chair or Speaker, adequately substantiated, it may affect a joint sitting of the Houses on the day of which the privilege is reported, or in the immediate future, the Speaker or Chair may, with due regard to the provisions of the Foreign Privileges Act, make an immediate ruling on the matter and announce it in the joint sitting. Case in point, for instance, could be the issue at Stanford a year or two ago, when the point was raised, or issue of signal, when the point of order was raised, and
the case of what is TRKS?
Of the TRKS signature name. The point of order is raised, and the presiding officer, or on the basis of privilege, or whatever, I mean, that's not a good example. Then the presiding officer would rule, consider the matter immediately, and rule on it immediately. But if the alleged breach of privilege does not directly affect the joint sitting of the Houses, in the immediate future, the Speaker or the Chairperson of the Council must refer the matter to the relevant committee of the House from which the respective member belongs. Now, of course, as we know, issues have been raised in the House which didn't really qualify as privileged issues. The same happens with points of order. But the rules are there that seek to guide how this rule should be. The method of privilege should be dealt with. May I proceed?
Yeah.
Chairperson, actually, I believe this matter really needs further elaboration, also in the rules. The reason is it is used flippantly at present. It's used just interchangeably with points of order. Now, it's clear a question of privilege must relate to members' privileges as contained in the Constitution, but also elaborated on in specifically Section 7 of the Powers and Privileges Act. And that is when a member is, for instance, barred from entering the House, and the member comes into the House and raises a hand and says, Honourable Speaker, I want to bring to your attention that so-and-so member wanted to influence me in my voting or whatever, you know, or barring a member, because the list is here. A person may not improperly interfere with a performance by a member of his or her functions as a member, improperly interfere or impede the exercise of performance by Parliament or the House of the Committee of its authority or function, threaten or obstruct members proceeding to and going from a meeting of Parliament or a House or a Committee, assault or threaten the member or deprive a member of any benefit on account of the member's conduct in Parliament or a House or a Committee, while Parliament or a House or a Committee is meeting, create or take part in any disturbance within the precinct, fail or refuse to comply with instruction by a duly authorized staff member regarding the presence of persons at a particular meeting in the precinct, etc., etc. Now, I'm just running through this to say I believe that it is one area that we did not elaborate adequately on in the NA rules. we make in the definition, we list what it means. We refer to the powers and privileges act, but we don't go to the detail. So I do believe that in this section, we should really elaborate a little further. If we could have the assistance of the legal drafters to just elaborate further, because you see, we have to also, and then we must deal with the presiding officers on the matter. When a member raises, the member must specify which privilege, you know, something to that effect, so that the same thing applies that we're trying with the point of order to say that the member must specify which rule, or, you know, what was unparliamentary. The same must apply to a question of privilege, to say, otherwise, it is really abused, and we must make sure that the presiding officers apply this rule. If it doesn't affect the city specifically, because no vote is taking place in a joint city, it's fine, then most of questions of privilege would probably not even affect the joint city. But the point is, it must be there, and we must recognize it, and therefore we must just try to regulate it better. Thank you, Chair.
Because I think it's an issue. We don't want to rewrite the power issues into the rules, but we want them to deal with the actual problem. And then the guidelines of the head of the president, the head of the officer, can really use the guidelines of the president to know whether it is a part of the privilege or not a part of the privilege. Members of parliament are very clear, even those that know very well what is a part of the privilege, but they take advantage of the privilege. They feel the member is teaching them very hard. I can see one of the workers, when he feels the security from each, he can't do nearly at all, you know, because the main issue is not to disrespect the house, but to remember, to make the member stable and see about the issue that is raised. But I think the guidelines can cover some of the points there. And then you can specifically say, because if you want the member to say, the point of privilege is this, you have to list all of them. Mm-hmm. And then I think that would be very difficult to do so. I need to find a way of doing it. Okay, yeah.
And I thought also, Chairperson, I thought of, as we write the rules all the time, we said we should not really take away the essence of parliament, you see. Or if you're really raising it a point of privilege because you just want to test your views, and then as things keep on stifling the environment, you are just going to create problems for ourselves. Because say members are very creative. You see, they say Baba got to do that, and nobody has ever thought it will come to the floor. And then a new discussion, a new environment get created. So don't. You say privilege, you sit the whole day explaining yourself, which is the one privilege that you can't exercise. You see. Because English is a nice language, a lot of ambiguity, you're going to get stuck. Let's avoid to stifle on ourselves. You see. But as we have said, it's upon the presiding officers to manage the house totally differently and persuade people not to go overboard.
That member of the rules, they know the powers and privileges, they know they know the point of order, the order that they consider a point of privilege when I was speaker. The secretary of the MCOP is sending me here a message that after the decision is going to be made, I'm going to post this. This is the clear one. This is the privilege that we have. But I think that has
to
be clear. No, we will definitely develop the guidelines and also just specify that the member must cite the perceived breach of privilege. And then we get to the last leg of this aspect. 14T, acting for absent member. If the member in charge of an order of the day is absent, or another member authorized by the absent member may take charge of the order, serving 10 years limit before the presiding officer. This would only apply to debates. It's very rare though in joint sittings, I must say. But in the respective houses, there will be a member who sponsor a matter, like motion. Joint sittings don't generally debate motions, but that does not have to have a role. Right of members to speak. A member may speak when called upon to do so. The point of order, having obtained the permission of the speaker or the chairperson before the meeting, we'll overlook at duplications, Chair, and see if we should eliminate certain of these provisions. And then when right of reply is allowed, a reply shall be allowed to the member in charge of an order on the day. A reply to a debate closes the debate. Again here, because they had their member was in charge of an order in the joint
sitting.
So we'll clarify the point, what we mean by this.
I just want to pick up this issue of a member being in charge of an order of the day before in a joint sitting. The first thing is, if you look at the definitions of a person in charge, it says with reference to a bill, I mean the person in charge of the bill in terms of the assembly or council rules. As far as I know, and I stand corrected, bills don't serve before joint committees. So there's something wrong with this term, person in charge. And I think we can clarify and unpack that and use maybe different terminology. I mean, in the case, for example, if I think of joint sittings, there's the State of the Nation Address, and then there are various debates that take place throughout the year. But those debates are, I mean, you perhaps do get a sponsor, but they're not... It's not the same mechanism that's used in the case of motions or members or matters of public importance and so on. It's a different kind of procedure. So I think we just have to look at the terminology.
Are we here with that?
Yes.
Any character for 4 years. Then now you are making the night better than you think you're going to lose the car. So it's in terms of what we're supposed to advocate today. We have tried our level best to help each other out of the room. And we see also members are not here, they apologize for their ambition. However, they are paid to see who forgets, so we are saying that we are pursuing on the basis that committee is not something, they don't take final decision. The final decision was taken by the joint committee. But this thing I do is very important. We sometimes think that we lose it here. you can't win them in another form of the general. That's why the custom of always apply that mind of the nation. It is why for advantage of having all the advocates here. Because when we go to the further team, there's no good one by one there. Therefore, they're hoping to win and take a number. And we hope that there will be more forward. What is our proposed strategy for the future of our nation? We may also attend that when all of us agree how we want to move forward. But I think we have dealt with this issue sufficiently. The team is going to sit down under the leadership for 1 year of this meeting. We'll take advice from the just to find some place where there are a lot of heavy weather space. They are not moving them. Maybe it is readable, not in the jargon, the Bellas to advocate the very detailed jargon sometimes. You must avoid it. You are laymen, you must understand your view because you read it. And the interpretation goes to a functional of interpretation. That's what colleagues you are going to have to do as well. After that, then I think you'll be ready to present it to the Transparency Committee. The intention is that we put that before the end of the year, in preparation again for next year and then to wait. That's just to depend on the lot of debate, the rules of debate, and the opinion, whatever is covered there. But as you read the document, when it's a real looking at it, potentially many things are going to change. But as you read it, the politics of it leaves the politician. What you can do with it is the correction of the language issues, ensure that every aspect is correct, they follow each other in the logical sense, and all that is welcome. I think we must do that politically. If there are issues that are very critical, we found to check that these are issues of other. If they need to reconvene a meeting, they must reconvene a meeting to look at it. And there are new areas that exist there. I think generally we have done two days. So I thought it would take us probably 2 days in our question with the work that has been done because of the support of everyone here. I think on that area, then the solution is there. I'm not sure how long that will take. Of course, it's going to take you some time, but it can take you a year. And then it will take you a short time. But if there are issues that we have to come back again, like I said, to happen before the rules are executed. I think members of parliament will report to at the end of the year. We want to have a year and then we have to do our life. We have also called that we on the principles. We started with the principles and we have discussed them. Hopefully, we will get the solutions and the other person from your colleagues and then again improve the language of it. There's a shortage in terms of language and everything. The politics of it belongs to members. The drafting belongs to you. The entire politics of it belongs to members. The one that could be persuaded to approve in front of the issue. Please do that, because you have done a great job. We had 9 to now we have 6. We have combined them very well and very clear. They would have just started to make a presentation of the report to the joint group committee. Whenever they have something, I think we will convene after we finalize some of the last questions. Then the last issue for you that we wanted to be in terms of our agenda adopted yesterday is just to agree on the strategy to move forward. This is the beginning of a long process. It's just the beginning. We're going to be seeing a lot of work. Let us go for a strategy that we are proposing. In the two Asia, it was Pangea, our order is Pangea. No, I call a page, this is one page, and this is a two page. Your page is down page, is your page. Then I'm typically take one page, one page, one page. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe we should just go straight to page 2. Can you page 2 of the document. A, September 2017. This is what we've been doing since last week, every day. We are done with this initial work. What we propose, Chair, is that we given space to clean up the document, and I'm sure by Friday, looking at my colleagues, we should, Friday next week, we should have a draft to send to this committee. Because we've taken notes, and but what we might not have ready, and my colleagues, my legal colleagues will advise me, their legal opinions are different to question. So they would indicate the clarification of the need from that. But in terms of the draft rules, we will be ready by Friday next week to circulate those to members. Then we will be ready for a joint rules committee meeting. We will work on dates for the joint rules committee. And then, Chair, you will decide, and I say you are in the committee, will decide whether you still need submissions by parties on this draft, on this draft rules of chapter 1 to 2, or whether you want those submissions at the level of the joint rules committee. Whether you want to get those submissions still made, reconvene as a subcommittee, or you'd rather say parties must take those submissions to the joint rules committee. So we'll need a guidance on that. We had proposed an information session, sharing workshop, but we think that this workshop should be looking at the chapters that must still be dealt with, not the ones that we've dealt with now already. So even what you have as a topic are likely to change, because you need to look at the financial management of government, the implications of that for the rules, the Money Act, the implications of that for the rules, and the Powers and Privileges Act, the implications of that for these rules. So that workshop will take care of that. So with these chapters that we did today and last week and yesterday, we think it is possible for the houses to adopt them by the end of this year. And that is what we are working towards. So we have a joint rules committee. We are likely to have two joint rules committees for this matter. So you have the first one, they will look at the principles and maybe raise certain issues. You come back, you refine, you take it back to the joint rules committee for adoption and then to the houses. So budget for two committee meetings of the joint rules. Then in regards to the other chapters, we think that process substantively should commence in February next year. But between now and then, we will do some work, we will do some research. For instance, we have the report of the independent panel assessment that was done a few years back. You have the report of the task on the legislative process. You have the oversight and accountability model. We'll be doing some research with a view to developing process documents for the honorable members. Then from February next year, you will be dealing with the rest of the rules. That's February to April, and then you have May, November, and yes. So our target is that by December next year, the joint rules should have been reviewed. We wish we could do it earlier, we'll try to do it earlier than that, but that is just the target. There was talk last week about resources, and that we should look at involving any person, even if it's not on a full-time basis. And you take it that the sentiment still remains. So we'll look into that administratively.
Well, that's what we are proposing for the issue. Yeah, you call one microphone.
No, I just want to talk on the immediate one. You know that if you can give earlier to parties, then parties bring back their response. Because if we go to, we always want to make sure when we go to the joint house, there's some stability and agreement on issues. So that we do know what members feel. You see, because other parties doesn't have the strength that we have with the DA of being able to attend these meetings, or they are not being allowed to come. No, I don't see that they want to. Okay. So we do give them the privilege of being engaging with the paperwork and all those things. And then we wait. If they do have some opinion, the chairperson just could reconvene the subcommittee so that we can polish up the issues that they are in. And then we can go to the joint house committee. It's not good to go and get surprises in the joint house. You see? I know when you present, you want progress. And when they start resisting, you're like, what is the problem? We're only going to want to sort out an answer or an ease. You see? So let's give them the chance and ask them to be able to give us feedback.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Chairperson, I support the proposed process. I just wanted to say that can we then also assume that the state law advisor will be part of this process, that we don't only rely, because of the states here, the tables and legal services will be supporting the committee. But I really feel that we need additional support to clarify some of the constitutional dilemmas that we want clarity about. So either we need external constitutional law experts, or we must have the state law advisor on board to guide us through this process.
State law advisors, they are part of us until the end of part one. Until these joint rules are adopted, they are part of us. They know. And what we have to talk about is the country that we have to proceed. Would there be some person who has found some of the experience that we have? During the any process, this issue was ended. They maybe should consider maybe some proposal signatures, not full-time bail, just to bound them from ideas that you and I sometimes don't have a little bit. But then you are trying to have a good opportunity to have a Cinderella, all of them. Don't do it.
Yes.
To assist us to move on. Of course, we have to sit out with police from there, and so we also had a discussion at the local level about the process. It's important to take them to us, and we have to be here. Yesterday, of course, I'm not going to be here, and the ship is out of the country, and we have to get again, just to come to that, have a discussion, and see what happens. But if we agree with the things, we are also supporting that we should accept the proposed strategies and the days to prepare. We just need to bear in mind, for instance, that once you go to our election, by the middle of next year, very few members will be here. Because it's election time, it's a campaign time. And then we should try our level best to honor whatever of them that we develop. Otherwise, it may take us until that year. And 2019 onwards, I think 2020, and many of us may not be there. It's just important that we finalize it soon and work it out as it is. Hopefully, the parties or other members will do it at that point in time and to finalize it. But I think, yeah, it's a week past. We should also ensure that one party comes. I've noted that it doesn't participate in this thing, and it takes a lot of our time in joint meetings.
Yeah.
And then how they think that sometimes they raise something that they are here. That's why this has seen everyone of time headed through what is when we go there. And then end up with a long, long, long meetings that are not necessary because they can't be able to come here. I think we should continue to persuade them. There's a way to interact with them. And then also there's another way to Natasha, persuading them to come and ensure that they attend the meeting.
because there will be no sufficient platform in the party to air the idea of innovation. In the Rules Committee General, it's a broad meeting. We don't also have another time to start again doing the rules as we have been doing here. When they're supposed to be here and not here, I don't think we should allow that. Because they delay many processes in the NA rules. They come there, they never attended the same meeting, that we have to again re-explain everything. It's not very helpful for us.
Chair, just in what you're saying, can we also just add in the fact that look around this room and it's NA members that are here. It is not kosher that we're discussing the joint rules and that we don't have representatives from the NCOP here. It was constituency period for everyone. So we all have other obligations, but we cannot, I mean, the same three people are here all the time.
Yeah.
And while we're happy to be here and we understand it, I mean, you can't be doing joint rules with only NA people present.
I don't know if they attend that this was the way of done for all the purposes of this. They have to look at this. But again, the process of forming members of parliament electronically is fully as a budget on the members of parliament must know that you have not had a lot of votes throughout the country. These are areas that we have already addressed. Because sometimes they are very taking the view that many of us may not really have been here for 25 years now. There are members of parliament who are not part of the team, but who really want to participate in drafting of the rules. They don't have platform. That's why electronic is given to them. They must know these rules, the public thing, the community must participate in this. Then the field stream, national assembly, field reference, OP, you work it out, how you do it. But it is easy, because this document has electronically. Any member must have it. Those are interested. They can then say that we want to make a presentation, we allow them to come here and make some presentation for today and move on that. General participation of members is very helpful. And then it's very helpful for parties also. And when they give final report, that members have been informed one way or another that this issue is a critical issue. And then they start to form members. And now to be closing.
I don't need to remind Natasha. And the NCOP that your members wanted to do some presentation last time when we started the process. Maybe we should just consult with them and get them to give us their ideas. We've been waiting for them from that side.
Colleagues, as far as you are concerned, you can attend. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay.
You are invited to see and talk to them.